Welcome to The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Friday, October the 22nd, 2021. On this edition of The Politocrat, the latest on abortion rights in the United States Supreme Court, cases and decisions you should be aware of, plus the Vice President Kamala Harris on Build Back Better as she gives a speech in the Bronx in New York City. All of that coming up next. On this Friday, it was a momentous Friday for abortion rights, but not necessarily the way that abortion rights activists would have liked, as the United States Supreme Court allowed for SB 8, the horrendously obscene law in Texas, to continue forth. That's right, the law that allows vigilantes to threaten and intimidate and perhaps even commit violence against people who would dare provide abortion access to the women who so desperately need it, to the people who so desperately need it. SB 8 is a criminal law. Literally a criminal and illegal law. And the United States Supreme Court today said, go on right ahead. We're not stopping you, Texas. You can just keep doing your thing. You can be the handmaid tail state. It's renamed. It's no longer the Lone Star State. It's the handmaid tail state. It's really that bad right now. And the attack on abortion rights here in the United States is really at an all-time high. This is a very telling time, and it's also a time in which we must fight back. Justice Sonia Sotomayor issued a scathing dissent, and that's exactly what was required, to the nonsense of the United States Supreme Court majority that thought it was a good idea to do this. I'm going to read that particular dissent right now. And this was earlier today. This is from Justice Sonia Sotomayor. This is a portion of her dissent. There are women in Texas who became pregnant on or around the day that SB 8 took effect. As I write these words, some of those women do not know they are pregnant. When they find out, should they wish to exercise their constitutional right to seek abortion care, they will be unable to do so anywhere in their home state. Those with sufficient resources may spend thousands of dollars and multiple days anxiously seeking care from out-of-state providers so overwhelmed with Texas patients that they cannot adequately serve their own communities. Those without the ability to make this journey, whether due to lack of money or childcare or employment flexibility or the myriad other constraints that shape people's day-to-day lives, may be forced to carry to term against their wishes or resort to dangerous methods of self-help. None of this is seriously in dispute. These circumstances are exceptional. Women seeking abortion care in Texas are entitled to relief from this court now. Because of the court's failure to act today, that relief, if it comes, will be too late for many. Once again, I dissent. Well said, Justice Sonia Sotomayor. I think your view is echoed across this country, which is a pro-choice nation. You have hundreds upon thousands of women across this country going to various states other than their own to seek abortion care. And it's a travesty that the United States Supreme Court is doing this. I will get into the United States Supreme Court on a separate episode, particularly around this issue. There is a massive case coming up that will be argued in December involving Dobbs and I believe it's the Jackson facility of care. I'm not sure of the exact nature of the case or the name of the case, but I believe it's involving Dobbs, D-O-B-B-S. That will be argued in December of this year before the Supreme Court. And the case that the justice dissented on will be argued on November 1st. That's just a few days away in the Supreme Court as to whether or not, and that's United States against Texas, as to whether or not the Justice Department can successfully sue in federal court to obtain injunctive relief against the state of Texas. That will be argued on Monday, November the 1st, before the United States Supreme Court in oral argument. Keep your eye on that. I certainly will be doing that and letting you know what the results are. We have to keep the pressure on here. We have to get out in front and get active in dealing with what is a full-scale Republican attack on women's rights, on all of our rights. These are human rights that the Republican Party is attacking and wants to take away from you. That is exactly what's happening here. We must frame this as a human rights discussion, even more so than a women's rights discussion. Yes, it should be obviously framed that way, but really and more truly and precisely, it must be framed as a human rights discussion. When you challenge and take away the autonomy of a human being, that is a human rights violation. And that's what this Republican Party is doing. And that's how we have to advertise it as, because that's exactly what it is. I'll be right back. Earlier today in Bronx, New York, the Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris, gave a speech on the Build Back Better agenda of the Biden administration. In many respects, it was the best speech that Vice President Harris has given so far in her vice presidency, which is just over 9 months old now. A spirited speech, a passionate speech, and a robust speech that was regrettably interrupted on a couple of occasions by a very boisterous and arrogant and very rude man who was escorted peacefully out of the building. You will hear that moment where the rude, vile man interrupts the vice president and disrespects her as she speaks. But above all, you will hear what I think is a very important speech and a good speech from Vice President Harris, who I think must be given some more room to spread her wings and fly, even if she is not the president of the United States. At least not for the next few years. Here now, in full, is the 20-minute or so speech of Vice President Harris earlier today in Bronx, New York.
Backstage, the congressman and I were talking about how we grew up, and you know, I grew up in the community center. I was a member of the Y. I swam at the Y, and so it is so good to be here. And Secretary Javier Becerra, I want to thank you for being a lifelong public servant and for serving our nation at the Department of Health and Human Services. And I just want to say it is great to be back in New York, Mayor. It's good to see you. And it's good to be in the Bronx. It's good to be in the Bronx. It really is. And with all of these esteemed New York electeds, Speaker Hasty, I see so many friends here, and you know, the elected leaders of New York are certainly elected leaders of this state, but national leaders. You really, the voice of the leaders of this city, of this state, really do carry a voice, not only for the people who live in this state, but for the people of our country. Governor Hochul, where is she? There you are. Hello, Governor. Thank you for welcoming me. Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, thank you. And then, of course, the Speaker and Senate Leader Stuart Cousins. Where is she? There you are. Thank you. It's good to see you all. And to Congressman Jamal Bowman, thank you for the work that you do that lift up the people of this district and the people of this state and country. He and I have had many conversations about... families of America, and I see the people who have continued to hold it all together through the roller coaster of this pandemic. It has been a lot, and people are tired. But when I look out across this room, and I see so many of our young leaders here, when I look out across this room and across our country, what I also see is determination. I see your resolve. I see you. President Joe Biden and I both see you. And we stand with you. And we are fighting with the leaders here for you each and every day. You know, when we arrived at the White House at the beginning of this year, the President and I knew that working families in our nation were struggling. We knew that during the pandemic, the families that had the least were being harmed the most, that there was not a family in America that did not feel the pinch of this pandemic, that working class families, middle class families who were struggling before were barely holding it together now. And so we set out to deal with these issues, to provide all families with some relief. And it worked. The congressman talked about it. In less than 100 days, thanks in large part to New York's congressional delegation, we passed our American Rescue Plan with $1,400 checks, plus housing assistance, plus child care assistance, plus a larger child tax credit, which is already helping to lift America's children out of poverty. The relief that was contained in the American Rescue Plan put us on a path toward a better future. Today, we have within our grasp an opportunity to finish what we started with the American Rescue Plan. This, right now, is a moment that will not last. It is a particular moment of incredible opportunity and a moment to transform our nation. And part of what your New York leaders and the President and I have been talking about in the halls of Washington, D.C., is let's recognize this moment for what it is. Let's recognize that the pandemic hurt so many people. So many people experienced such great loss of every proportion. But by the way, things weren't so great for a lot of people before the pandemic. But the pandemic highlighted a lot of what is wrong, what was wrong, the fractures and the fissures and the failures for all to see. A lot of those issues which folks in this room have been working on for a long time, but a greater number of people had an opportunity born out of crisis to see that there is work to be done. And this then is a moment to do it. And we can see also that in this moment of transformation, let's think about it. It's a moment where schools and small businesses are opening back up. It's a moment where jobs are being created and our economy is growing. And so in this moment, we have an opportunity to build an economy that works for working families. So let's make it work for working families. And right now, the President and I are working to that end with the United States Congress to pass our Build Back Better agenda. And I'm sure you all have heard about the Build Back Better agenda in my briefing documents. It usually says BBB. But some have been asking, well, what exactly does that mean? Well, it's about being better on climate. It's about better health. It's about better jobs. And intentionally, it is about our families. This is our agenda. You are right, brother. I know you are. And how about if you and I talk about that? So let me finish.
Why aren't we working with the Chinese on their Belt and Road Initiative?
Okay, you know what? You and I will talk after I give my comments, and I'm happy to talk with you. But right now, let's talk about the agenda that will include speaking to all people and allowing everybody to be heard, because that's part of what we want in our democracy. Everybody gets their chance to talk, and everybody gets a chance to be heard. So this is our agenda. This is our agenda to cut taxes. The Build Back Better agenda includes our agenda to cut taxes. Because for too long, the burden has been misplaced in a way that it is working families, middle-class families, low-income families, while the rich are not paying their fair share. So this is a moment to cut taxes and lower costs for the working families of our nation. So in the Build Back Better agenda, we are fighting to cut health care costs for working families and for all people. We are fighting to cut energy costs as we combat climate change. And we are fighting to establish universal pre-K and to lower the cost of childcare so that parents can afford to care for their children and to participate in our workforce. How much did we see during this pandemic? How that burden was disproportionately placed on the women in our workforce, so much so that 2 million women left the workforce during the pandemic and are still outside of the workforce. What we saw during the pandemic, and it was highlighted, those individuals who are among what we call the sandwich generation, individuals, men and women, who are parenting their young children while taking care of their elderly parents. And let's be clear about the burden that they carry, born out of love and a sense of duty and responsibility. It is the responsibility of tending to the needs of their children, including what that might involve in terms of homework, in terms of taking care of their basic needs, and while taking care of elderly parents who have a different set of needs. These are the burdens that families are carrying, often without any help. The Build Back Better agenda is saying, let's see folks. Let's see what they're going through. Let us ask, are we really creating and reinforcing a society that is about allowing people to reach their potential? Do we have a society that rewards ambition? The ambition a parent has for their children? This is at its essence what makes, we believe, and it's therefore the spirit of our Build Back Better agenda, what we believe makes for a stronger and a more productive and a better community and country and a better quality of life for all of the people of our nation. So we are fighting for all of these things. We are fighting to give seniors and people with disabilities more options so that they don't have to move out of their home to get the care they need. We are fighting to expand paid leave so that our nation no longer comes in last among wealthy nations in providing these essential benefits. You know, the president is about to go on a trip, a very important trip, with the G20. I've been meeting with leaders of nations that are our partners and allies, and they look at us, and they are asking, is America really fulfilling her potential and her promise? They are asking, can democracies work? Can you care about building a strong economy coexistent with caring about human rights, civil rights, and a perspective that is born out of a sense of humanity and what it requires in terms of holding people up and treating them with dignity? All of these things are at stake right now. All of these things are at stake. So when we do things like fight to extend the child tax credit, yes, it is about our most important asset and resource, which is the children, but it is also about the strength of our nation and our standing in the world. So let's talk for a minute about the child tax credit, because it has a huge impact on the families of our community and our country. The larger child tax credit that the president signed into law back in March is one of the largest ever single tax cuts for families with children. It is also the first time this tax cut has been distributed monthly. Now, this is something I've been working on for a long time, which is the component of the plan that is about monthly payments. Why, some asked, do you need to do that? And the point is really pretty simple. You got to pay your bills every month. So why don't we provide the tax cut every month if it is really designed to help people with their bills and the cost of living? So for 4 months now, the American families that have received this new approach have received a monthly tax cut of up to $300 per child. Parents and grandparents, who are often the primary caregiver for their grandchildren, have used those checks to manage the cost of raising children while continuing to work. Nearly all the families that receive the child tax credit are indeed working. And for other families, the child tax credit is helping them to cover the cost of childcare so that they can get back to work. But unless Congress acts, these monthly checks will stop coming after December. You've heard that earlier today. 1 in 3 children would no longer be covered by the full tax credit. And it is a particular note and something that we all care deeply about. That includes half of Black and Hispanic children in America. Needless to say, we cannot let that happen. We cannot let that happen, and we will not let that happen. And that is why, together with all of the congressional leaders who are here today, we are fighting to pass our Build Back Better agenda. And you've probably seen the news or heard the news about the details of the final bill. The congressman talked a little bit about the sausage-making process that is. But I'll tell you one thing for sure. We will not allow anyone who makes less than $400,000 a year have their taxes go up. We will not allow that. That is non-negotiable. In fact, this plan cuts taxes for working families. This plan also makes corporations pay their fair share, because, and we all know why that's important. It's just simply not right that a nurse or a teacher or a firefighter pays more in taxes than a hedge fund manager. It's just not right. It's just not right. So the bottom line is that this is about what we value as a nation, about who we value. And I want you all to know, the president and I value working families. The president and I both come from working families. The neighborhood I grew up in was a neighborhood of hardworking folks. People who took seriously the importance of their job, who took seriously the importance of caring for their families, who did all that they did with incredible pride. Nurses and teachers and construction workers, folks who were a part of the community, gave to the community, and lived in a way that was about understanding the dignity of work. My mother worked around the clock as a breast cancer researcher. She would pack lunches early in the morning for me and my sister and see us out to go catch the bus to go to school. And when we came home at night, we would eat dinner together. And then after we went to bed, I would sometimes sneak and just check on her, and she'd be at the kitchen table paying the bills. She never complained. But I know sometimes she was barely holding it together. We have families around our nation who know it won't be easy, but we can't give up. We have families throughout our nation, in this very community included, who would do anything and everything to give their children the opportunities that they rightly deserved. Parents and families who see the capacity of the children, who see their dreams, who look in their eyes and see the twinkle, who nurture their ambitions. Let's support those families. Let's have a system and a society that rewards the hard work that that takes. Let's value that in every way we know we have the capacity to do. That's what this is about. And we have a moment right now to actually get this done. The members of the United States Congress, right now in their hands, within reach, have an opportunity to lift up our families and our children, to see and acknowledge with humility what has not been working, and with excitement to do something about it. So I'm here today to ask people to see this moment for what it is and to step up. We can do this. It is the right thing to do. And to the young leaders here, and I see you, and I'm so proud of you, you never let anybody tell you something can't be done. I have a motto. I eat and drink no for breakfast. Don't hear it. If most of us in this room heard no, we would not be in this room right now. We know what can be done. So New York, change is possible. Change is possible if we make it happen. And so let's make this happen. Let's get to work. Let's pass our Build Back Better agenda. Let us build an economy that works for working families. May God bless you, and may God bless America. Thank you all. Thank you.
So a solid and very important speech by Vice President Kamala Harris in Bronx, New York, earlier today. The Vice President can continue to go from strength to strength, and next year the midterms will be a massive, massive, important event. We must continue to stand tall for the issues and press both President Biden and Vice President Harris, while also making sure that we vote in all of the elections, local, state, and on the general level. And don't forget, next year are the 2022 midterms, and we have to start preparing for them right now in 2021. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.